From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, the U.S. Surgeon General issuing a somber warning to the nation yesterday on Fox News Sunday.
Well, it's tragically fitting that we're talking at the beginning of Holy Week, because this is going to be the hardest and the saddest week of most Americans' lives.
We'll talk about that with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, as well as an op-ed he wrote calling the Trump administration's efforts to help small businesses impacted by the coronavirus the Marshall Plan for Main Street. A key part of the plan is the Paycheck Protection Program, which is being funded through the Small Business Administration. And until late Friday, the agency was unclear on the participation of churches and other religious nonprofits. Congressman Mike Johnson, chairman of the Republican Study Committee, will be here to talk about how the administration made clear the plan helps churches, too. And speaking of churches unable to meet, churches continue to get creative. One church in Ohio says their creative thinking is paying off. Pastor Frank Carl of Genoa Baptist Church is here a little bit later. And in Charlotte, North Carolina, abortionists are apparently deemed essential by the governor, but not sidewalk counselors. David Benham joins me to explain. And finally, a little over 30 years later, could we see a repeat of history in Latin America? The U.S. apprehended Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega in 1989 after he was indicted by a U.S. court. Now, the U.S. Justice Department has charged Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro with narco-terrorism. And last week, for the first time in decades, the U.S. announced an expanded military presence near Venezuela. I'll be joined by the man who was a part of nabbing Noriega in 1989. That and more to come on this Monday edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Well, many church doors will likely stay shut this Easter for the first time ever. But the Trump administration is working to make sure that Americans are able to return to normal life as soon as possible. Many churches, though, getting creative in having services in unique ways, most of them online. But interestingly enough, and we'll talk a little about this a little bit later, this creativity is paying off for some churches who are seeing spikes in the large number of people that are watching their services online. And those that have been meeting in creative ways, like drive-ins and other ways, are seeing a strong response from their communities. We're going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later as well. Also, the Trump administration working through really late until the night, Friday night, to get guidance on the Small Business Administration, making sure that nonprofits and churches could participate in the Paycheck Protection Program. That was actually in question Friday morning as the program rolled out. A lot of confusion, but some guidance coming out Friday evening made that very, very clear that churches who are hurting, nonprofits that are hurting, can participate in that as well. Mike Johnson, who was a key part of that, chairman of the Republican Study Committee, will be here to talk about that. Do we have Congressman McCarthy? Okay, we're waiting on Congressman McCarthy to join us. Key part of the kind of putting this plan together, he's calling it the Marshall Plan for Main Street, in terms of keeping the economy, the engine idling, so that when we get through this virus, we'll be able to get the economy going once again. But I want to start with this. Over the weekend, actually yesterday, on Fox News Sunday, the Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, said this. Play the clip number three, please.
Well, it's tragically fitting that we're talking at the beginning of Holy Week, because this is going to be the hardest and the saddest week of most Americans' lives, quite frankly. This is going to be our Pearl Harbor moment, our 9/11 moment, only it's not going to be localized. It's going to be happening all over the country. And I want America to understand that. But I also want them to understand that the public along with the state and the federal government, have the power to change the trajectory of this epidemic. You mentioned Italy and Spain. They had a very, very hard time, and they're still having a hard time, but they seem to have reached their peak and are coming back down on the other side. And you say weeks, months behind. I would actually push back a little bit. When you look at their trajectory, from about a month ago is when they really started to lean into their aggressive mitigation efforts, their really aggressive mitigation efforts. And so I want Americans to understand that as hard as this week is going to be, there is a light at the end of the tunnel if everyone does their part for the next 30 days. We're seeing Washington, actually, where this started, doing a much better job. California's trajectory has leveled off. And so there is hope, but we've got to all do our part.
And that's the key part. Everyone has to participate, and that is, it's difficult, especially when you're not touched by the virus per se, but it's going to require everyone. In fact, over the weekend, I had talked about this, but my daughter got married, and it was in our front yard with 10 people present. Had to radically change our plans, but we had to do our part. And every American needs to do their part, because the frontline workers, as we've talked about on the healthcare, the first responders are being impacted by those who are not helping contain the spread of this virus. Joining me now to talk more about this is the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who represents the 23rd District of California. Kevin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate you having me on again. And congratulations to your daughter.
Well, thank you.
I know it was a tough time, and I know it was smaller, but it was the presence of God and family, and they're going to have a wonderful life together.
That's right. The presence of God and 10 witnesses, but we got it done.
That's right.
And they're off to a good start. You heard the clip as you joined us, the Surgeon General warning this could be a really bad week when we look at as we're reaching the apex of the coronavirus.
It very well could be. The one thing you have to know is had President Trump not taken those actions by stopping those planes coming from China, it could be worse than where we are today and the preparation of what we've been going through. If this is going to be our worst week, remember, it's going to get better through, but we'll never get through this without all of us uniting together. Look, the virus is here. We did not invite it. We did not ask for it. But we will defeat it together. And every day we learn something new. Every day we get further along. Think of what everybody's doing together. You got Bill Gates out there building 7 different factories because we're getting the ingenuity of a vaccine. Remember, after SARS, it took us 2 years. We were into a clinical trial. We are already into a clinical trial. And he's building these factories knowing 5 of these factories won't go anywhere and they'll be shut down and he'll lose money on it. But we'll be prepared with the vaccine there so we can mass produce it and get it through, and some of it's so promising. We're seeing new testing. I just took one of those Abbott tests. Not invasive at all, and you get an answer in less than 10 minutes.
Wow.
So as we get through this, and the ventilators and others, but there's lessons we have to learn. Those decades before, where China was able to start controlling a supply chain, China in January buying billions of masks when they were saying it wasn't even causing effect from person to person. It wasn't contagious. The control of what they have over the World Health Organization. Now they have the control of that PPE, the personal protection equipment that our medical doctors need. Well, when they produce 50% there, now we're watching what China is doing, is holding that up to only sell it to countries that are going to agree to have Huawei come in. Remember, had China not lied to us, 95% of this would never have happened. That's what
right.
The Southampton study actually told us. And when we fight through this, America will show our ingenuity that we will solve this. We know this is a tough time. We've been through really tough times before. One thing I've always said, we have our faith. Let's keep our faith and make our faith stronger. We know God will give us the strength to get through this. We have to help each and every one of us together, and the best way you can help them is staying apart. That social distancing is proving the case. But when we get through this, we're going to have to get this country back up and running. And remember where we started, the strongest economy we ever had, and we could come right back. That's why what government passed from the CARES Act, from the small businesses, getting you back working again, where we'll actually provide you a loan through your community bank. But if you take that money and you pay your employees, even if you laid them off, bring them back. You pay them, you pay your rent, you pay your utilities. That's no longer part of a loan. That's a grant just given to you. So we'll take care of you for the next 2 months, give you that bridge as we go across and get us through this and walk to the other side.
Leader McCarthy, let's talk about how important those small businesses. You talk about the ingenuity of business, and a lot of that driven by small business, the entrepreneurs. And the workforce, I mean, I don't think people realize the large percentage of Americans who work in small business.
It is the majority of Americans. Look, I started my first small business when I was 20, and small businesses could turn into be very big. You know, Apple started in a garage, but these are every small business we see across the nation, anything with 500 employees or fewer. They are the backbone of America. But what's more importantly, government is now right now telling them they have to shut down so we can protect all of us.
Right.
Government is stopping us from working. So we have a responsibility collectively. We rather see you don't, and they're not having a cash flow. So what are they going to do like anybody else? They're going to have to lay people off. Well, we should give them that bridge, pay for their employees, pay for the rent, pay for the utilities for the next couple months as they get through this, and they can get back opened again. That way we don't fall off the cliff. Remember, starting out how strong we were, this
right.
problem wasn't created because of financial problems. It wasn't created because they did something wrong in their business. It was created because China lied to us and to the rest of the world. So thousands upon thousands of people had to die. That should never be the case again.
So we had this, as you pointed out, strongest economy, lowest unemployment, growing wages. Then this hit, this black swan event hit, and now we see, in some cases, unemployment growing. But this is designed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is designed to kind of keep the engine idling so that when we get on the other side of this, we can take off much more quickly and hopefully get the economy back to where it was.
Perfect description, idling. Just think of your car. You're at a light. You're idling till it's on red right now. They want you paused, stopped, so it would go green. Do you have enough to get going? So it does a number of things. First things it does is $140 billion to our hospitals and those medical individuals on the front line who are our modern-day soldiers, what those nurses and doctors are doing every day, and our first responders. Think about what they're putting their life on the line every day going through.
Right.
Then it goes through, and it actually provides a check to you, where government will send it. If you make $75,000 or less, you're going to get a $1,200 check. You get $500 for your child, too. If you make, then it phases down up to 99,000. Then if you unfortunately get unemployed, normally you have to wait a week to get paid. No, we pay you the first week. The other thing we do, federal government gives you another 600. Then it phases the small business, and then the larger business provides resources to them as well.
Well, this is a once in a lifetime event, as you outlined in your op-ed that was in the Washington Examiner. But America has faced significant challenges before, and together we've gotten through them, and together we can get through this as well with God's help. Leader McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate all that you do.
All right. Thanks so much. Kevin McCarthy, Minority Leader in the House of Representatives. All right. Don't go away. When we come back, there's more on this plan. There was a lot of confusion when it was rolled out on Friday morning about whether or not churches and nonprofits who were told not to meet could participate. It's clear now they can't. Congressman Mike Johnson, you're next. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast, so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast, called Lecture Me, was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, we talked about this last week, and going into the weekend, the rollout of the Paycheck Protection Program, which was a part of the CARES Act, which we were just talking about with Leader McCarthy. There was, and this thing went quickly. I mean, from the time the president signed it till it was rolled out was 6 days. That's amazing speed in Washington terms. There were some hiccups, as predicted, with churches and nonprofits, which typically are not involved in grants and programs from the Small Business Administration. That was clarified, because there were some churches that went and applied for this this 2.5 month bridge, as the leader just explained, and they were said, no, you can't you don't qualify, or you have to meet this certification, which would be in violation of their religious beliefs. End of day Friday, after the work of many, including my next guest, the issues were resolved. The pathway is now clear for churches to be a part of this program. Joining me now to talk more about this is Congressman Mike Johnson, who is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee and from my home state of Louisiana. Congressman Mike Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's always a pleasure. You're doing great work.
Well, thank you, and you as well. I know that, in fact, we were on a call Friday afternoon or Friday morning with pastors across the nation discussing this, and even at that time, the clarity. In fact, we got information that the pastors were getting in real time from talking to bankers and others we were able to take that information, you were able to take that information, and get clarity from the SBA by Friday night.
We were, by God's grace. I mean, the SBA, I'll tip my hat to the administrators there. They've just done a phenomenal job. I mean, we've asked them to do something that's almost impossible, and I know that you've had a lot of discussion about that on the program already, but they deserve credit. You know, Scripture says we give credit where credit is due, honor where honor is due, and there's some honor due there. There's some glitches in it, but this is one that they fixed pretty quickly, and hats off to Treasury Secretary Mnuchin as well, who's just helped us bird dog this, and the president himself, who tweeted about this issue over the weekend.
Right.
I don't even know if you saw that, but we were able to get it clarified. We're really grateful. This was a bipartisan effort, and while we're giving honor, I'll give a nod to Democratic Whip James Clyburn out of South Carolina, and my Democratic colleague Cedric Richmond out of Louisiana, and our Republican Whip Steve Scalise. The four of us jumped on that to get this clarification and make sure first that churches are included as all other nonprofits, which is a new thing. A lot of lenders are not used to dealing with 501c3s in an arena like this. But then we had to get further clarification to make sure that even small and independent houses of worship could not be unintentionally excluded from receiving this aid if they didn't have one of those IRS tax exemption determination letters. So the long story short is the good answer is that it's all resolved now. You don't need that. You can proceed. And if you need this assistance, then you're just as eligible as all other small organizations and businesses.
And Congressman Johnson, there were some other significant aspects that were clarified in the process as well. And there was, a frequently asked questions document that was put out by the SBA. In fact, pastors, church leaders, that'll be on my website, TonyPerkins.com. But no religious organization will be required in any form or fashion to sacrifice its autonomy or First Amendment freedoms under this program. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And thanks to the hard work of a lot of people, the SBA, of course, published its interim final rule on Friday evening or Thursday evening, it was. And anyone can pull that up. And I know you'll have it attached at your website. I have it at mine. It's everywhere now. Mine's mikejohnson.house.gov, by the way, is a kind of a clearinghouse for all this frequently asked questions documents. But yes, in the interim final rule at page 27, if anybody wants to go and look and read it for themselves, we got language included in there that says that all loans guaranteed as a part of this program and through the CARES Act have to be made consistent with constitutional, statutory, and regulatory protections for religious liberty, including and specifically lists the First Amendment, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and SBA regulations on point. So that's a great sigh of relief for a lot of persons. I had a lot of church leaders, pastors, evangelists who sort of automatically leery of government overreach, as we all are, and we all should be at all times, right?
Yep.
And they said, you know, Brother Mike, hey, are there going to be strings attached? You know, is this going to change the rules for my ministry and how I relate to, you know, hiring practices or what I say or do? And I said, absolutely not. We got it clarified. It's in writing. And by the way, pastor, friend, evangelist, if you hear otherwise, you let us know immediately and we'll jump on that, because that is not the intent of the Congress.
Right. And so my response to pastors and other ministry leaders who have asked about this, you know, as it's unfolded, is, look, you know, pray about it. You know, ultimately, you've got to, you know, follow the Lord's direction on this. But there are no strings attached. As I was just describing earlier with the minority leader, Kevin McCarthy, the government told these churches not to meet. They told the businesses to shut down. And this is to keep people from being put into the unemployment lines, to keep the economic engine idling until we can get through this crisis.
That's exactly right, Tony. And I've had to make this same explanation and summary for people for the last couple of weeks. As you know, and some of your listeners know, I chair the Republican Study Committee. It's the largest caucus of conservatives in the House. These are all the fiscal hawks. You know, we're the ones that are constantly advocating for limited government and less government encroachment and involvement in our lives. But this is an extraordinary situation. This is a pandemic. As the president rightfully said, we're in a war against an unseen and unforeseen enemy. Nothing like this has ever happened before. And when the government ordered and closed everything down, the government has a role to help fix it. And that's why we're doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Congressman Mike Johnson, as always, appreciate the work that you do. You were vitally important in the clarifying of this, in not only the initial legislation, but in what unfolded in the last few days. So thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and appreciate the great work you do.
Thank you, my friend. Keep it up.
All right. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, chairman of the Republican Study Committee. All right, when we come back, churches are getting creative. And I've said this all along from the very beginning. Think outside the box, the four walls of the church. Don't think about what you can't do. Think about what you can do. Talking about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities." And many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. At FRC, we're compiling stories of how churches are responding in different ways to the coronavirus crisis. Now, if your church is doing something unique, be sure to write us. You can send it to us by email, stories@frc.org. Stories, that's plural, at frc.org. Because I want to highlight this because there's no reason for churches just to be sitting on the sidelines. There's ways to serve. In fact, this is the time the church should be in high gear. People are afraid. The uncertainty has them anxious. And who better to provide clarity and calmness to the situation than the church? I mean, we have the confidence of knowing the future is going to it's going to unfold according to God's plan. All right, one church in Ohio is getting creative with their Sunday gatherings, holding a drive-in church service. With me now is the pastor of Genoa Church in Westerville, Ohio, Frank Carl. Pastor Carl, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good talking with you.
A lot of good things happening there in Ohio. Of course, we've got some great guys on the ground up there, a lot of churches that we're affiliated with on our Watchman program there.
Yeah.
You guys are getting it done. Come as you are, but stay in your car is the motto. Tell us about it.
Well, actually, I think our church is going to the dogs because last week, I think we counted almost 50 to 60 dogs that were in the cars also. So it's kind of neat to see them coming in that way. And Tony, it's just a takeoff. When we were interviewed by some different news outlets and magazines, they said, "Where did you come up with this idea?" I said, well, Robert Schuller, I think, introduced this to our nation 50 years ago. And rather than standing by just what you said in the opening remarks in this segment, this is the time for the church. This is an opportunity in work clothes. Now, a drive-in church service won't work for everyone, but it is ideal for us. We are between two suburban areas, a rural suburban, and we using an FM broadcaster. We do three services. This Easter, we'll do six services. And it's the turnout has just been phenomenal, not only from our people, but from the community. And we're still abiding within the, you know, the safe distance with that the state wants us to have. And people don't even get to see me necessarily. They wrap all around the property, around the building, but they are on location.
Right.
And there's affirmation that way.
Right. And that's what we're operating within the guidelines. No one is being put at risk, abiding by the social distancing, but you're able to gather. I love this approach because it's not looking at what you can't do, but it looks at what you can do. And I think there's going to be some innovation that comes from this. And I'm talking about the church. There's going to be some innovation that comes from the church that is going to change the way we do ministry going forward and make it more effective.
I hope so. Just a couple of the highlights that we have really noticed or I have really noticed is that, number one, and I would encourage anyone listening to this, be faithful to your church. The church, the work of the church must go on. Financially be faithful. Right. Prayerfully be faithful, and then working be faithful. Pick up the phone and check on your neighbors and check on people that are in the church fellowship. We have a group that's writing letters to all the nursing homes in our area, and we have a little bit, not enough, but some food pantry work being done. And the folks are really doing great, but what I really love seeing, just like back in 08 when the financial downturn was how faithful the body of Christ was to the church. And our offerings, and I know this can't be the same everywhere, but I'm amazed at how faithful people are putting God first in an uncertain time like this.
Well, I think, look, it's just a matter of people seeing churches that are doing something, that are ministering in the community, that are not sitting on the sidelines, you know, thinking, oh, what should we do, or being caught up in the anxiety and the fear. I mean, look, I'm talking to pastors across the nation, and those pastors that are stepping forward, doing what you're doing, Pastor Carl, are finding people are responding. So I commend you, I thank you, and I hope other pastors will follow your lead.
You bet. And I thank you for the opportunity. And there's a way, if whether it's live stream or Facebook, to do everything that we do costs about $300 to get it started and finished. It's not a big investment.
Not at all.
And
not
churches at all. Can do it everywhere. But I'm glad the Lord's given us this opportunity. And I hope it never goes back to business as usual.
I hope you are right. Pastor Frank Carl, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, I like that story because actually I've been working on this. I am joining with the Central Area Pastors Association, my hometown of Central, right outside of Baton Rouge. We're going to do this for Easter Sunday. We're doing a sunrise service. I'll be the MC of the event, 7 a.m. at the Central High Stadium. In the parking lot, we'll be watching the social distancing. You'll stay in your cars. Nobody will be getting out of their cars. Be an hour long. There'll be about six or seven different churches participating. It is in a Central Area sunrise service, and a collection will be taken to go to the Central Food Bank to help out families that are struggling right now. So, find out more about that. I'll have more details posted on my website later this week. But 7 a.m. Central High Stadium, a sunrise Easter service coming up this Sunday. Stay in your car. Come as you are. I like that. I might grab that. All right, when we come back, David Benham joins us. Abortionists are essential, but sidewalk counselors not, according to the governor of North Carolina. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, as the cases of the coronavirus increase, state governments continue to issue stay-at-home directives. And we have said that you should comply with those. We should be guided by that. It's all designed to keep our emergency rooms and health care facilities from being overrun with this surge of infected patients. So we're there. We're for that. We've supported it. Now, there are exceptions, though, for essential businesses. But one state apparently thinks abortion clinics, and they're not the only state, but the city of Charlotte, state of North Carolina, apparently believes that abortionists are essential. But when it comes to sidewalk counselors that might help those women make the right choice, they're not. Something's not right here. In fact, on Saturday, there were individuals out doing sidewalk counseling that were arrested. Among those arrested, well, actually, my good friend David Benham, chairman of the board of Cities for Life, entrepreneur, former professional baseball player and reality TV star. He was one of the pro-life sidewalk counselors, and he joins me now by phone. David Benham, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay. Let me make sure I get this right. There were how many of you out there providing counseling to these women who were going into an abortion clinic that apparently the governor and the mayor see as an essential service?
Well, when I arrived Saturday morning, there were three other sidewalk counselors. So there was just a skeleton crew of us. And it's very interesting, Tony, I was listening to your description, and you're right. We had a local ordinance and then a state statute, and those were COVID-19 laws, and they wanted everybody to stay in shelter place, order in place. And so they deemed abortion clinics essential businesses, but here's what else they deemed essential businesses, and this is the key. They said that any federally recognized 501c3 public charity that provides social services is, and I'm going to quote, strongly encouraged to continue their services. So we are at Cities for Life a federally recognized 501c3 public charity. And so we had every right to be there to offer these social services to these mothers. By the way, if a woman gets an abortion, they leave the facility. It's over. No one's following up with them. That's it. But with us, we're offering them, I mean, if you need housing assistance, what kind of critical care do you need? Do you have medical needs? We throw baby showers. And when we started in 2010, Tony, we have had over 5,000 mothers that have chosen life and have been plugged into our critical care network. In addition, we work hand in hand with the Department of Social Services, with our various ministries. We have over 90 families that are working with either foster or adoption with our local city. So we are a legitimate social service organization. And when I arrived on Saturday, I was called Saturday morning, and one of our sidewalk counseling team, they said, listen, there's 15 officers out here and they're threatening arrest. So I was like, whoa, hold on a second. So I show up and we only had three sidewalk counselors. And the officer came to me and said, sir, you need to leave. And I said, excuse me, first of all, there are not more than 10 people here. Second of all, I'm here as the chairman of the board of Cities for Life, and we are a federally protected essential business. And he said, no, no, you are not. And anyway, we went back and forth, and you can see the video on our Facebook page or on anything that you've tweeted. And it's very clear that I was there. There was not 10 people there. The media is spinning this, saying that over 50, as a matter of fact, they said 50 protesters congregated, which is absolutely patently false. So they ended up arresting me, Tony. I'd never been arrested before.
I mean, to me, this would appear as viewpoint discrimination. They're allowing the abortionist to operate within the clinic, and the First Amendment protects those that would be on the outside. This has long been a debate, and it has been upheld in court repeatedly that you have a right to speak to the girls, the women coming into those clinics. I mean, you're offering them ministry. That's what you're doing there. But they're going to arrest you but allow the abortionist to continue. It sounds like they're working as kind of the protection agency for the abortion clinic.
Well, I know they are. But it gets even worse than that, Tony, because we as an organization, we are Christians, and we believe that we should take care of our neighbors and everybody around us. And we want to honor and abide by these statutes and these ordinances. We don't want people getting sick. So what we did as an organization was we limited our number of sidewalk counselors that can come to make sure that we were under 10. So we deliberately were at three sidewalk counselors, and we took sidewalk chalk and marked off boundary markers where certain sidewalk counselors could not cross so that we did not breach a 6-foot radius. We had hand sanitizer. We went above and beyond to honor the ordinance, even though we are clearly protected as an essential business and did not have to do those things. So we, in our Christian convictions, went much further than the law even allowed, and yet they still arrested me.
You have, I think, Alliance Defending Freedom is actually going to take up your case?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we have attorneys out of the woodworks coming because they know they have a slam dunk case here.
Well, I was just going to say, as a former police officer and actually being on both sides of this, having seen how this unfolds, my prediction is the DA is going to drop those charges pretty quick, like a hot potato. But my advice would be for the attorneys to pursue this and make a case out of it, because this is, you know, you can't arrest someone you can't stop essential activities from going on and then say, oh, well, we made a mistake. We're not going to take it any further. You can't wash your hands of it once you've done it.
Yeah, the very thing that they were arresting me for, and you'll see in the video online on social media, well, there's more than 10 people here. So first of all, there's not, but you go to a park. There's 500 people right there. There was 1,000 people at Home Depot. Those are all supposed essential, and you weren't making any arrests there. So, you know, one of these things, and I think this is an important point for me to make. On the one hand, I'm an American citizen, and yes, we are going to follow through with this. We are not. You don't just drop it and walk away and think this is going to be okay. We're going to go after this, and they know it. But that's important for our children and our children's children for their rights. But on the other hand is their spiritual reality that we look at Christians in America today, and I mean, we are changing our behavior to protect ourselves because of COVID. And I think that's a good thing. But what is best is for us to change our behavior to protect the unborn, which is the best thing. And we have to step in. We have to take a look at this and realize, okay, while COVID is truly a global pandemic, it has not even scratched the surface of the amount of lives that abortion has taken globally. So this is an important wake-up call for us to say, okay, we want to love our neighbor. We want to practice social distancing. We do not want to gather with more than 10 people. We want to do these things, but we also have rights as American citizens. The government is not given unlimited power because of this COVID crisis, and we need to be a voice for the voiceless.
We play within the temporary rules, but they should abide by them as well. And clearly,
that's
in this case, they were not. David Benham, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to have you on the program, my friend.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you, man.
All right, David Benham, David and Jason Benham, who actually come from good stock when it comes to this issue. Flip Benham, former head of the pro-life group that was out there, just slipped my mind. Operation Rescue, that was it. Longtime pro-life activist. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, 30 years ago, a little over 30 years ago, 1989, Manuel Noriega, the Panamanian strongman, was arrested. He was indicted and then ultimately was taken into custody by U.S. forces when they went into Panama. Now, here we are, just announced last week after charges had been filed against the Venezuelan president, Maduro, that the U.S. has military, strong military presence close to Venezuela. Could we be seeing something unfolding once again in Latin America? Joining me now to talk about it is the man who actually was a part of apprehending Noriega back in 1989, our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony.
All right, I mean, you have to be thinking kind of deja vu when you see what's unfolding there in Latin America last week, the announcement of a strong military presence now moving in that direction, first time in decades. And, of course, the head of state there in Venezuela being charged with a crime related to narco-terrorism.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of the situation that unfolded with Manuel Noriega, with the exception that the bounty on him is only $1 million. So inflation, you know, is $15 million on this guy. But look, it's not just Maduro. It's really the Supreme Court justice, the head of the Supreme Court. It's his defense minister. It's a former chief of intelligence for the military. I mean, there are quite a number of these thugs that are under indictment right now. But there's a major difference between this scenario and 1989. In Panama, we had an array of U.S. military forces living there. They had their families there. And in fact, what eventually brought Bush 41 to the decision point to go after Noriega was when they killed a young Navy lieutenant, Lieutenant Paz, and then abused his wife. And we are told that that's when the president said, enough is enough. Go take that country down and bring him to justice and turn it back over to the people of Panama. We don't have that exact situation right now.
In fact, many experts are saying that a U.S. invasion of Venezuela seems very unlikely. Some say that the military presence there is a show of force. How do you interpret the movement of the U.S. military toward Latin America, in particular to the borders of Venezuela?
Well, I see it as a show of force as well, Tony. But that said, we do have an embassy there, and we do have a lot of Americans in that embassy, to include the Marine detachment there that secures the embassy. And if we go back to Iran in 1979, keep in mind that we actually went in there to try and rescue hostages because the followers of the Ayatollah Khomeini had taken over our embassy and had 52 Americans who were being held hostage. If they were to do something that foolish, then I think that could trigger an immediate response. And I think we would actually have support from probably Colombia and maybe some of the other South American states there to go in and take that government over, to rescue our hostages, and then ultimately oust Maduro. And I would be surprised if he would survive that because it would just be ugly.
Well, given where Venezuela is from an economic standpoint, I mean, they've been, you know, I wouldn't even say on the edge, they've been over the edge. Now the oil price, not that their oil was working, their oil extraction and was working at really at a good pace, but nonetheless, they were getting money from oil. I mean, how much longer can they hold on?
Tony, that's been a question for over 2 years. How much longer can they hold on? Look, 5 million people, 5 million Venezuelans have fled the country. And they're in, you know, places like Colombia and Bolivia and other places. They've fled the country. And the inflation there is sort of like it was in Germany after World War One, you know, after the Versailles Treaty. Their money is basically worthless, and the food and medicine shortages are incredible. So what's the next step? People are going to people are dying there because they're not getting enough food. Infants, children are dying there because there's not enough food to keep them alive. And you have to ask yourself, how much longer before they just say we have nothing to lose and they rise up against them? And it's just a bloodbath there.
Do you see any other government? I know Cuba has been, not that they're a threat of to the United States at all, but do you see any other government, Russia or someone, stepping in with this stronger U.S. presence there?
Well, Russia's already in there. Russia, you know, remember back several months ago, Russia sent a couple of aircraft in there and brought some advisors in. So Russia is already there. Now, not in great numbers and not in any serious military capabilities beyond, you know, probably some naval capabilities that could be effective down in the Caribbean there, in the southern Caribbean. But, you know, you also got to watch the Chinese, too, because this is the Chinese, not only are they involved in this coronavirus, but the Chinese are buying oil at record rates right now. And the Chinese have every reason and every incentive to want to keep the Venezuelans pumping oil to them. They're storing this oil, and you just watch the oil markets. When we finally get a control on this COVID, you're going to see China actually being one of those that's going to make a lot of money based on the amount of oil that they actually bought while this was all going on, much of which is coming from Venezuela.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. General Boykin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on Washington Watch.
It's good to be with you, Tony. Thanks.
All right. And folks, thank you for joining us as well. Hope you'll return and be with us again tomorrow. Until then, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.